Lonely, I'm Mr. Lonely.
That is Bobby Vinton with the song Mr. Lonely, and a lot of us have been feeling a lot lonelier these last couple years, but the longer you're lonely, the worse it is on your body and the harder it becomes to socialize. There are strategies you can use, and today, that's our edition of Be Well, our series on your well-being. Four strategies to overcome loneliness in today's edition of Be Well. Jackie Olds is here. She's an associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard and the co-author of the book Overcoming Loneliness in Everyday Life. Jackie, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
And also with us, Ashley Kersner, founder of Skip the Small Talk, which aims to help people connect on a deeper level. Ashley, thanks for joining us as well.
Thanks for having me.
So, Ashley, here in Studio 2, I will start with you. Let's get to the numbers. 36% of Americans reported feeling lonely frequently or almost all the time. That's more than a third. Mm-hmm. According to preliminary data from Harvard University, that was October 2020. Now, those were early days. We were severely isolated. But that number jumped to 61% for young people aged 18 to 25. Understanding the context of those numbers, what do they say to you?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, the obvious answer that I'm sure everyone's immediately going to go to is, of course, COVID. Nobody's talking to people in the same way that they were before. But something I'll also add is that since COVID, we've come up with all these cool technological advances like Instacart, where you don't have to talk to people. You can get all your basic needs met without ever talking to a person. And there's actually a lot of research out there showing that when you're lonely, it's actually harder to get out there. So those tiny micro interactions actually were doing a lot of work for people. And especially for people who are a little younger, like folks who are millennials and Gen Zers, it's more difficult for them to get their basic needs met because while they're, you know, you can get all your basic needs met while never leaving the house and therefore while never talking to a person. And I think COVID has made it so much more difficult now that the lonelier you get, the more difficult it is to actually put yourself out there. So I think in addition to the obvious, like people are not really talking, people are not out there, people are not socializing, it's also making it more difficult to actually put yourself out there and socialize.
So Dr. Jackie Olds, I want to ask if that tracks in your psychiatry practice. And I'm particularly noting that you told us as we were preparing for this segment that a few years ago, people wouldn't even express their loneliness, but that is beginning to change.
Well, I think that is a change for the better. And maybe COVID brought loneliness kind of out of the closet. Because there was a time where if you said you were lonely, you felt like that was like saying, I'm a loser. I can't even figure out how to make friends, which I should have learned in kindergarten. But now everyone essentially was up against terrible loneliness during COVID. Even if you had a family, you didn't get to see anybody outside the family. You were locked down with your family, which in some ways can be conducive to loneliness. So the fact is that we have all been bathed in loneliness during this COVID, and it means that everyone is willing to talk about it in a way they never were before.
And Dr. Jackie Olds, you said that's for the better. I'm struck by Ashley Kersner saying, the less you talk, sort of the less you do. And so is this an important step in, I don't know if recovering from loneliness is the right phrase, but is it an important step, Jackie?
Well, I think being able to call the bad feelings by a particular name and recognize that we are social beings who need to be connected. And there were people who did find ways to connect with some of their oldest friends through Zoom in a way they wouldn't have dreamed they could have done. I think just being able to call something by its proper name is a teeny little baby step toward progress, but I certainly wouldn't have prescribed a dreadful pandemic as the way to get there.
Yeah. So, Ashley Kersner, when Jackie was talking about sort of coming out of the closet about loneliness, you were nodding vigorously. So pick up that thread.
Yeah, there's research to support that just naming an emotion actually makes us better at regulating it. So being able to just say, I'm lonely, even if you're saying it to yourself, saying it to yourself goes a long way because then you are more able to you're now in a position that gives you power over it. You can now, make choices about how to reduce that if you want to. And sharing it with someone is connecting, ironically. Like, having two people agree, yes, I am lonely. You know, there's some research on something called I statements, which are sort of sharing your internal states. And so if you're sharing an internal state and I agree with you and I say I'm experiencing the same thing, that itself is connecting. So just by talking about it, you're actually reducing it, especially if you're talking about it with someone who shares the same opinion.
We're talking with Ashley Kersner, founder of Skip the Small Talk, and Dr. Jackie Olds, who's an associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. This is our regular segment, Be Well on Your Well-Being, and we're talking about the impacts of loneliness and how to find your way out. Jackie, we reached out to our texting group and asked them to reflect on their experiences of loneliness, especially during the pandemic. And if you listeners would like to join our texting group, you can do so by joining with the word Boston. You send the word Boston to 617-766-0382. That's Boston to 617-766-0382. Miriam in South Weymouth said, quote, "My husband went from having a big group of friends to a very solitary lifestyle. He fell into depression and now is taking medication, but still struggling to keep up with life. Could it be because he is energized by socializing and now doesn't have that? And how do you support someone in getting back out there?" End quote. Not everybody's an extrovert, Jackie, but what are your thoughts for Miriam?
Well, I think supporting her husband to get back out there, even though he feels out of practice and like nobody would want to hear from him. Usually when people are all withdrawn and not reaching out, it's because they've assumed that other people wouldn't want to hear from them because other people aren't reaching out and they barely notice that they themselves aren't reaching out. So yes, I think anything she could do to go with him, you know, start some group activity that might happen outdoors so they don't have to worry about COVID. There are a whole slew of things you can do in the summer especially that do not endanger your health even if you're 70, but allow you to be with other people. And those things are energizing. I think she's absolutely right.
So Ashley Kersner, last year when Boston Mayor Michelle Wu was candidate, Michelle Wu, at one point she advocated for talking with people on the T, which in social media got lots of reaction. And we talked about it on air a little bit, how hard it can be, also how painful. On one of our shows where we talked about it, we got a call from one of our listeners, Anna and Maynard, responding to whether about you should chat with people on the T. Here's Anna.
As a single woman, you know, out and around, when somebody approaches you or just starts talking to you, it doesn't feel safe at all. It feels incredibly dangerous and you don't want to connect. There's that fear there of what does this person want from me? You know, it just doesn't feel safe to talk to a stranger.
So Ashley, your reactions to that?
Yeah, there's actually research to support that. So there's Dr. Nicholas Epley did some research where he found that he basically asked people, okay, imagine yourself in this situation. You're on a train. You're talking to a stranger. Do you think you'd enjoy that? Do you think that would make you happier? Do you think that would make you less happy? And so he looked at the answers, and then he had people actually, he forced people to do it. He said, do you think you'll enjoy it? And then even if they said no, they said, well, sorry, but that's what the study is. Go ahead, talk to strangers. What they found was that even for the people who thought they would have a bad time talking to strangers, they actually reported increased mood afterwards. So it seems like this is an area where we have really wrong perceptions about ourselves and wrong predictions about ourselves, where we think we're not going to enjoy talking to a stranger, but once we're forced to do it, it actually seems to improve our mood and it seems to reduce loneliness. So I think this is an area where we can all do to like think it would behoove us to really assume that we're probably wrong in our assumptions that, you know, we may err on the side of thinking that talking to strangers will be awkward, it'll be uncomfortable. But in reality, you know, to trust the research that, you know, according to research, you'll probably have a better time if you talk to a stranger.
So time has
agree more.
Go ahead. But let me just correct. Time has kind of lost all meaning. Mayor Wu was already Mayor Wu when she said that. Sorry about that. I thought she was still a candidate. Go ahead, Jackie.
I was just going to say that I couldn't agree with you more, Ashley. I think that talking to strangers and saying hello to people, you know, I'm an older lady, so it's not, you know, everybody knows that older women are always talking to lampposts accidentally. But basically, the fact is that those smiles and little talks with strangers can make a day so much better. And it's not, you know, usually people can tell when somebody is not the kind of person you should engage with in conversation with. But the vast majority of people, you know, actually love being chit-chatted with for a couple of minutes or smiled at on the street. And one of the saddest things about all having to wear masks was that we couldn't even smile at each other. Bad enough that we couldn't talk, but we couldn't even smile.
So, Jackie, explain to us the physiology of this. Ashley talked about the research that even a little bit of interaction physically makes you feel better. What's the physiology that's going on here, and what happens to our bodies when we are lonely?
Well, the surprising thing that has been found only in the last, I'd say, 5 to 8 years, is that when we feel lonely, it doesn't matter whether we are surrounded by people and feel lonely or we're all by ourselves and feel lonely. Either of those states affect our genes and affect how our genes are expressed, which is really quite surprising. And that was one of the big findings in science over the last decade. And it means that usually when you're feeling lonely and slightly distressed about being lonely, your immune antiviral genes stop expressing the usual antiviral kinds of fighting cells, and the cytokines and the sort of inflammatory proteins go up. We express more of those inflammation products that make us feel more uncomfortable. So essentially, at a genetic level, we are affected by loneliness.
So I'm going to turn back to Ashley Kersner now. That was just Dr. Jackie Olds, who's an associate professor of psychiatry at Harvard Medical School. We had a conversation a while back with a Boston Globe reporter, Billy Baker, who wrote about friendship in a book, Friendship in Middle Age, Seeking It Out. The book was called We Need to Hang Out. And we talked about the challenges of just reaching out to people to become friends, to hang out, how vulnerable you can feel. Here is Billy Baker, when he did reach out, telling us a little bit about that.
I found a guy who was willing to let us use his barn on Wednesday nights, and then I invited a dozen guys and said, basically, do you want to join my middle-aged dad fraternity where we hang out on Wednesday nights, and I don't know what we're going to do, but it has worked.
And it did work. People said yes, and they went, and over time, they built a relationship. Your work with Skip the Small Talk is focused on let's get to relationships. So tell us a little bit about that work.
Yeah, it's funny to hear that story because it's very similar to how Skip a Small Talk started, where I just posted it to Facebook, said, hey, we're going to come, we're going to answer question prompts that are going to help you get to talk about stuff that you might not otherwise get to talk about. Show up if you want to. And I expected a few friends to show up. And before I knew it, we had hundreds of people interested. We had to cut it off at 50 people. And, you know, I expected it to be a one-time thing. And then people asked, like, when's the next one? And I didn't expect to host another one, but people kept showing up and kept asking me to do it. So we just kept doing it. And now it's been 6 years of people asking us to do another one and then people showing up. So I think what people really don't understand is that, you know, it's very, if you build it, they will come. I think people, I myself was shocked when I started it, and I didn't expect that other people felt the same way I did. I didn't expect that there would be so many people who also wanted to have these meaningful conversations. I'm especially reminded of somebody who, I think it was actually the day before this event, I saw him at a party. We talked for an hour about bathroom remodeling, and I was bored out of my mind. And the only reason I was talking about it was because I thought, oh, this person wants to be talking about small talk. They're probably not comfortable talking about anything else.
They didn't, did they?
Yeah, no. And the thing is, the next day, they came to Skip the Small Talk. And I was like, oh, we could have been talking about something much better. And I think what happens is we all get stuck in this sort of behavioral economics game where everyone is doing small talk because nobody thinks that other people want to actually talk about deeper stuff.
So very quickly, what's a better first question to ask when you start a conversation with someone?
Honestly, I like, how's your life been these days, which is slightly different than how are you doing, or like, what's going on in your life these days? Just a slight phrasing difference can sort of get people to say more than just good or fine. And then I think the trick is also, once people give you any sort of answer, to sort of ask follow-up questions that ask about internal states as opposed to just facts about themselves. So instead of just ask, you know, when I ask where you're from and you might like tell me a city, instead of asking asking, oh, where in that city? I might ask something like, what was that like living there? Or what are some things you loved about it? So that way, that gives you so much more ground for connection, because it's really those internal states that make you feel more connected, as opposed to knowing, you know, what neighborhood you were living in necessarily.
So Dr. Jackie Yields, we have about 30 seconds left. If somebody's feeling lonely and wants to take a first step as a psychiatrist, what would you recommend as step one?
Well, joining some kind of group, and Ashley sounds like a great choice, but I don't want to deluge her with people. However, joining a group that meets regularly and has as its purpose something that you care about usually ends up over time causing some relationships to build and grow. And as Ashley said, even if it's comparing notes about the fact that you and the other people are unhappy with various aspects of your life, that can build into long-term relationships.
All right.
So that's my advice.
And that's good advice. And that's from Dr. Jackie Olds, who's Associate Professor of Psychiatry at the Harvard Medical School and co-author of the book Overcoming Loneliness in Everyday Life. Also with us, Ashley Kersner, owner of Skip the Small Talk right here in Boston. Thanks to both of you. Really appreciate the thoughts.
Thank you.
Oh, we appreciate coming.